Okay, we're beginning here, six lines at the bottom of Membet, Amud Bet. Era Papa Amar. We first had an explanation or an attempt at an explanation as to why there is a Braita that tells us that the execution area Beit Din has to be outside of the three machanot, meaning outside the city, versus our Mishnah that says that it only has to be outside of the Beit Din or away from the Beit Din. So we explain that we have a limud from the Braita that teaches us, just like the Michutz LaMachaneh, that is found by the Parim and Israfim, means Michutz L'Shlosh Machanot. So too, the Michutz L'Machaneh, that's found by the Mikalel, who is subject to Skila, that we find in Vayikra Chov Dalet. There too, the Michutz L'Machaneh means Michutz L'Shlosh Machanot. The Gemara challenged that from Shchut Echutz, and said in the end that they felt that it was more closely identified with the Parim and Israfim. Rabbah Amar, Moshe Hecha Hava Yotiv. Where was Moshe residing? The Machane Leviyah. He's found in the Machane Leviyah. V'amar Lei Rachmona, the Torah says to him, Hotzeya Ta Mekalel, that you should take the Mekalel out, El Michutz Ta Machane, outside of the Machane. So that's Chutz Le Machane Leviyah. It tells you to move him one Machane out. Then it says, V'yotziyu Et Ha Mekalel El Michutz Ta Machane. And then it says in the last pasuk there in the Parshiyah, that Vayedber Moshe b'nei Yisrael v'yotziu, and they actually took out the Mekalel Michutz LaMachaneh v'yigmu oto even b'nei Yisrael asu kasher tzivah Hashem et Moshe. So he says here v'yotziu et Mekalel Michutz LaMachaneh es Chutz LaMachaneh Yisrael, tells you that you take him out an additional Machaneh. So Rav Papa is saying the source for the fact that we do the execution or the stoning outside of the Shlosh Machanot is not from Perini Safim, but rather from the Psukim themselves by the Mekalel, whereby the Torah instructs Moshe to take the Mekalel outside the Machaneh. The Machaneh that it must be referencing is where Moshe is residing or present, and that's Machaneh Leviyah. So that means go to Machaneh Yisrael. And at the end of the Parshiyah it says, Vayotziu et Mekalel, that they take him out of Michutz to Machaneh, so that's another Machaneh. Now there's obviously a problem with that, and that's what the Gemara says over here. Don't you need that for telling us that that's what they did? That the first Pasuk is an instruction for Hashem to Hotzei et Mekalel, Michutz to Machaneh, take him out of the Machaneh. The latter Pasuk is a description or a narrative telling you that that's what they did. Vayotziu et Mekalel. It's the fulfillment of the instruction in the other Pasuk. So how you could claim that that's an additional need to take him out of another Machaneh? Where it says, Asiyah behedra ktiva, the Pasuk that we just read at the end of the Pasuk, it says, Bnei Yisrael asu kasher tziva Hashem et Moshe. That Bnei Yisrael carried out everything that Hashem had said. So you don't need to specify Vayotziu et Mekalel Michutz to Machaneh as being separate. Ela me'ata, Vayigmu oto even my avdile. That's the case. There's a little phrase in between the two, which is Vayidaber Moshe b'nei Yisrael v'yotziu et Mekalel Michutz LaMachaneh, which are now saying is a part and parcel of the instructions to take him out. But then it says Vayigmu oto even, that they killed him by the stone. U'bnei Yisrael asu kasher tziva Hashem et Moshe. So if you're telling me that the latter part of the pasuk is telling us that b'nei Yisrael did exactly what they were told, then why does the pasuk specify Vayigmu oto even? What is that teaching us that you wouldn't have known otherwise? Mara tells us, oto velo ksuto. There is a limud from there, which is vayigmu oto. Oto, without his clothing on, meaning that the stoning has to be done directly on him, and without any barrier between him and the stoning. And even though, as Rashi points out, the limud of oto is already mentioned in the tzaba'ah, the instructions that are given by the Mikalel, it's only brought about the next drasha, which is only found in the Asiyah, which is drasha of Evan, shemeit ba'evan achat yatsa. So the oven comes to teach you that if one stone kills him, that is sufficient. So those are the limudim that come out of Vayigmu oto oven, that it's not telling us the fulfillment of the instructions by Bnei Yisrael, which is told to us by the end of the pasuk, Bnei Yisrael asu kasher tziva Hashem et Moshe, but rather it comes to teach us other dinim. One of them is that he's to be stoned naked. The second one is that the stoning doesn't require stones in plural, but a single stone can be sufficient. V'yitzrech l'michtav aven, v'yitzrech l'michtav avanim. So over here by the Mikalel, it says that you stone him with a stone, and by the Mikoshesh Yitzim, it says you stone him with stones in plural. So which one is it? Is it avanim or aven? So Gemara says that you need both of them. Because v'yitzrech l'michtav avanim, dikatav rachmane aven, hava mina hechad lo meit bechado, lo neite achrite umiktale. That had it been that it only wrote the word aven, if he didn't die from that one stone, we wouldn't necessarily permit you to bring in other additional stones. And that the pasuk here means that he uses a single stone by which to kill him, and then you wouldn't bring any additional stones. Kata Rachmana Avanim. That's why the Torah wrote the word Avanim, to tell you that you can use other stones besides the Evan itself. Tosfot over here says, V'adichtiv yad ha'idim tiyeh bo barishona. that the Edim have to be the first to stone him, then how could that be? You have Edim in plural, and you only have one oven. Havamina dehani milhechid da'ota oven kayemet. Maybe that would only be true if that stone is still around, so that each aid will throw that stone or use that stone to kill him. Avim nevda o nafla liyam, if it got lost or fell into the ocean, avino delo naite achrite, we wouldn't bring an additional stone, and that would be it. The one stone, either it does the job or it doesn't do the job, it'll be done. That's why katav rachman avanim. Ikatav rachman avanim, if the Torah just wrote avanim, avamina mikara naite tarte. We have to start out with two. Katav rachmana oven, to teach you that you start out with one stone, and the edim place the one stone on him, or stone him with that one big stone. If he's already dead, then fine. If not, then they continue with avanim. So that's why by the mikoshesh it says avanim, and here by the mikalel it says oven. Where it says, v'hai haitana ne'emar kamar. Well, that's a nice explanation, Rav Papa. But what are you going to do with the breita? The breita itself tells you that you take it michutz the shlosh machanot, and then it queries, is it three machanot or one machaneh? Ne'emar kan michutz the machaneh, v'ne'emar b'perim and isrim michutz the machaneh. It specifically gives you the source for the shlosh machanot. So how could you, Rapavu, come and now all of a sudden introduce these new psukim when the breita itself gives you the source from Parim Nisrafim? So Gemara says, ilu lo ne'emar kamar. It means that if it didn't say it, v'hachi kamar. This is what is meant by the breita. Ilo ne'emar kra. Had you not had this explicit in the psukim, like I just explained to you, Rapavu says, which is through the psukim of Motziyat HaMikalel, hayitu omer gzer shava, I would have done the gzer shava from Parim Anisrafim. Achshav she'nemar kra. Now that I have it out of the psukim, meaning I have it from the psukim in Vayikra Chav Dalet from the Mikalel, Gzer Shava lo tzarech. I don't need the Gzer Shava because I have a different source for it. So the Gzer Shava in a sense is a backup, and the way to learn it is from the Mikalel. So that's how Rav Papa would read the Braita, which is interesting in of itself because it indicates here that Gzerot Shavot are fungible, and that is a little bit questionable because we say that Gzer Shava is only something that is passed from generation to generation. You need a Masorah to have a Gzer Shava. This supports the idea that is promoted by the Rabbeinu Tam, by Rashi and some other places as well, that the Gzerot Shavot were not a Masorah of the exact Gzer Shava, but rather they were a Masorah that there was a limud here from a particular word, and then the Chachamim have to piece it together to figure out what the Gzer Shava is, but not necessarily that they had the exact Gzer Shava b'Masorah. Ravashi offers another way to learn it out. Moshe Echav Yotiv b'machaneh Leviyah. He was in the campment of the Leviim, which is already one machaneh out of the machaneh Shekhinah. Barmalei Rachmano, and the Torah tells him, Hotzei et ha-Mikalel. Take Mikalel out of your machaneh, chutz the machaneh Leviyah. Remove him from machaneh Leviyah, puts him in machaneh Yisrael. And then the puzzle continues, Hotzei et ha-Mikalel, el michutz the machaneh, chutz the machaneh Yisrael. The addition of el michutz the machaneh tells you not only should you remove him from the one machaneh, machaneh Leviyah, but also to remove him from the Machaneh Yisrael as well. And that's what you learn from the El Mechutz LaMachaneh. V'yotziu et ha-Mikalel la'asiyah. So the Gemara says then, what do you do with v'yotziu et ha-Mikalel? That is for the asiyah. That's the actual carrying out of the instructions. Asiyah behejek dibuhu. Now this is the opposite of Rav Papa. What Rav Papa answered now questioning Rav Ashi with, which is, well, at the end of the pasuk it says, v'neiso asu kashir tzivai shem et Moshe. So if that's the case, then why do you need that if you already have the Hotzei et ha-Mikalel El Michutz LaMachaneh telling you that you're already outside the Shlosh Machanot? Or it says, Homi Bailei, Chad L'Smicha, V'Chad L'Dechia. That is to teach you the other dinim that are associated with the Mikalel. One is the Smicha of the Edim, that the Edim have to put their hands on the defendant or the person they're going to execute. And one is the tchiyah, to teach you that you push the person off of a high place. And that's what Rashi notes over here. Smicho tchiyah dichtivi b'tzava'a v'lo mefarshi b'asiyah. That are specified in the instructions, but are not clarified in the asiyah. So that's why the pasuk comes along and says, v'nei shalasu af smicha b'tchiyah. That they did those things as well. Samchu kol ha-shumim. That the people that heard the Mikalel, meaning the Edim, have to put their hands on him. Dechia, lav hachik tiva. Dechia is not written here, but they learned that out from Har Sinai, where it says, Yaro yi yareh, mikan shechai min Edim, ba v'docheyu. Umapilo, Megova Beit Eskila, that one of the Edim comes and pushes him off the high point of the Beit Eskila, the Aretz, Beit Eskila Gvah Shtei Komot. The Beit Eskila was two stories high, and they pushed him off of that. So what they're saying is that the Asiyah that it says, V'nei Yisrael Asu Kasher Tziva Hashem Et Moshe, is because the pasuk doesn't specify everything they did. It says, V'yotziu Et Mekalel, which is a fulfillment of the instruction of Hotzei Et Mekalel. Then you have, V'yigrmu Oto Aven, which is the fulfillment of Ragmu Oto Kol Aida. But the pasuk also says, V'samchu Kol Hashemim Et Yidehem Al Rosho. Here you don't have any indication of the fulfillment of that. That's what the end of the pasuk, V'nei Yisrael Asu Kasher Tziva Hashem Et Moshe, comes to tell you that they even fulfilled that, and they even fulfilled something that's not written in the Parsha, but we know about Skila, which is that you have to have Dechia, they have to be pushed off a high point, which you learn out from Har Sinai. So that's the way Rav Ashi explains the Psukim of Asiyah. So Amar Lei Rabbanan Rav Ashi, the Didach, according to you, Kohani Hotzi, Tichti Vei Beparim Nisrafim, my Darash Behu. What are you going to do with all of the Hotzi that you have by Parim Nisrafim? Now, we already learned before that the Parim and Nisrafim are done outside of the Shlosh Machanot. So now, as far as the Parim and Nisrafim are concerned, we're fine with that, because that's true. They have to be done outside of the Shlosh Machanot, as well as the Trumat Nedeshin has to be placed Mechutz LaShlosh Machanot. So that works for the Drusha if you say that each one of those, Bohutzi El Mechutz LaMachaneh, means that it's outside of the Machaneh. But according to you, Rav Ashi, each Hotzi El Mechutz LaMachaneh is actually two Hotzaot. You have the Hotzi, and then El Michutz the Machaneh. And then if you add those together, you're going to end up with six Machanot that you have to go outside of, and that makes it very difficult. What are we going to do with the Drashot there? And the Gemara leaves that as a Kasha. That's a problematic issue for Rav Ashi's Drasha. So for Rav Ashi, he can explain away what's happening here in our Psukim as to why it says Hotzi Et Mekalel El Michutz the Machaneh, which according to him is two Machanot. And then again says V'Hotzi Et Mekalel El Michutz the Machaneh, which is the fulfillment of that instruction. But by Parim and Nisrafim, he's going to end up now having by the Parkoin Mashiach, by the Parayom Dover Shil Tzibur, and the Trumat Adeshin, V'Hotzi El Michutz the Machaneh, which is each one of those is two Machanot. That's a grand total of six Machanot instead of three that we were thinking of before. When we thought V'Hotzi El Michutz the Machaneh is only one Hotza'ah, now you have six, and that's not relevant by Parim Nisrafim, and we leave that as a problem for Rav Ashi's explanation. Alright, now the Gemara goes back to the Mishnah and says, Echad Umeid, that they have the person who stands outside of Beit Din with the handkerchief or the flag to wave, and then you have the person on the horse who's awaiting the sign to stop the execution procession if they find a zchut on his behalf. So Amar Ravuna, pshitali, clear to me, echad evin sheniskal ba, whether it is the stone that he is stoned with, vechad eit shenitla bo, or the tree upon which he is hanged, vechad zayv shenerag bo, or the sword by which he is beheaded, vechad sudar shenechnach bo, or the handkerchief they used to choke him, kulan mishel tzibur. All of those are paid out of the public coffers. My time out. Why would you say that? Because it would be inappropriate, maybe even insensitive, to ask the individual to fund his own death. And that he here is going to have to buy the vehicle by which he's going to be put to death. You can't ask somebody to pay for that. It's something that's done by the state, it's done by the court, and therefore it has to come out of the public coffers in order to do that. By Rav Huna, Sudar Shemenifin Bo, the handkerchief which they wave, shvitzul shiratz, and the horse that chases after the individual to stop the execution procession, umamidan, and stops them, mishel mihu. Who funds that? So before, all those items were to the detriment of the defendant. So over there we said it comes out of the public coffers. These two items which are mentioned in our Mishnah, which is the handkerchief or the flag of the individual standing outside the Beit Din, as well as the horse that was out further out, that would chase down the execution procession to stop them, both of those are to the benefit of the defendant. Kaven da'atzala didei, since they're for his benefit, mididehu, do we make him fund it? Or dilma kaven de beidina mechayvin lemeavad ba'atzala, since there's a requirement on the Beit Din to do v'tzilu aida, that they have an obligation to try as hard as possible to find the individual innocent or acquit him, mididehu, it has to come out of their pockets or out of the public coffers. Vitu. Ha'anamar avchir barashi, amar avchista, ha'yotzei lehareg. Someone who's going out to be executed. Mashkin oto korit shel livona. We give him a small piece of frank incense, bekosh shel yayin, inside of the wine. Kedei shetitaref da'ato. In order that he should, in a sense, lose his mind or be numbed to the execution that's about to happen. So the person doesn't worry or doesn't become overwhelmed by the execution. Shenemar, Tnu Shechar Le'Oveid, V'Yayin Le'Marei Nefesh. We actually quoted this in yesterday's daf when we said that Le'Roznim E Shechar, that it's inappropriate to give the prince's intoxicating drink. Over there, the context of the psukim are those that adjudicate, those that are supposed to do justice, should not be drinking. But there are some people who should be drinking or should be intoxicated, and that is Tnu Shechar, to give the strong drink or the intoxicating beverage, Le'oveid, the one who's losing or lost someone, B'yayin and wine, Le'mari Nefesh, so those that are bitter. So those are individuals who are suffering. Those are the type of people to give wine to and to give intoxicating beverages to. The Gemara in Brachot tells us that originally by Avelut they used to drink wine because the wine helped to mitigate the tremendous feelings of sorrow and the difficulty that the Avelim were undergoing. But then Chazal later on eliminated the drinking of the wine because people were becoming drunk in their Avelut, and obviously that was inappropriate. It'd be appropriate to drink a little bit in order to numb the pain, but it would not be appropriate to get drunk, and people weren't keeping those boundaries or those thresholds, and therefore they stopped them drinking wine. But you see that that is appropriate for those that are being taken out. So again, over here, Betanya, Nashim Yekarot Shem Yerushalayim, the wonderful women of Yerushalayim, the prestigious women of Yerushalayim, you may not vote to Mevil Totan. They used to voluntarily bring it and give it to him. They used to provide this intoxicating beverage or this numbing effect for him. Lo yitnadvu nashim yekarot. If they did not donate this, mishal mi. Who does this come from? Who pays for this? Havade mistavra mishal tzibur. Over there it makes sense to say it would come out of the public coffers. Kevin dichtiv tnu. Because it says in the pasuk tnu in the plural form, mididhu, that it must come out of the monies of the tzibur. So here we have one part where we're clear, which is the tools of execution are clearly paid for by the tzibur. We have also, by the case of the wine or the intoxicating beverage, even though we weren't sure about it, we said from the pasuk we know that it comes out of the public coffers. What we're uncertain about is the flag and the horse, which are done for his benefit, for the defendant's benefit, whether that comes out of his pocket or comes out of the Beit Din's pocket, because the Beit Din's obligated to provide hatzalah for the defendant as well. If one of the Talmidim says, I have something to his merit, I have something to say that would be to his benefit or to his defense, v'nishtatek, and then he's lost his ability to speak, mahu, what do we do? So minapeach Rav Sheshit biyadei, so Rav Sheshit started waving his hands, nishtatek, afilu achad besofa olam, nami? Says, wait a minute, if you're going to worry about this guy who all of a sudden became mute and couldn't speak anymore, then why don't you worry about somebody in the end of the earth that might have a schut on his behalf? Maybe he had something to say and we just didn't hear about it. So here this guy had said he had something to say, and then all of a sudden he went mute, so he didn't say it. If he didn't say it, why do we have to worry about it? Just like we don't worry about people saying things when they're not present in the Beit Din. If they're on the end of the earth and they might have a schut for him, we don't worry about it. So we're not going to worry about this. He says, no, hatam lo kamar, hacha kamar. There's a big difference over here. Over there, when you have somebody at the end of the earth, they didn't say anything. We don't have any indication that they have a schut on his behalf. Here the Talmid stood up and said, I have something to his merit. I have something in his defense. So my, what's the din? Tashma, let us learn from Damar Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, Echad min haTalmidim shezika umet. If one of the Talmidim spoke in defense of the individual and then died, Ro'in oto kiilu chai. We look at him as if he is still alive, ve'omeid bimkomo, and still in his position. Mean that we look at him as being enumerated amongst the numbers of people that are defending this individual, and he remains in defense of the defendant even though he has passed away. So you see that once you have a schut that has come in place, then we leave it in place no matter what. Zika in, lo zika lo. From there you would say that it was only because zika. He already spoke up and said something to the benefit of the defendant. That's when we say it remains in place. But had he never spoken up, if he never had said something to the benefit of the defendant, we wouldn't count it or we wouldn't look at it. So that would answer your question. He didn't say anything, so it doesn't count. Or it says, Zika pshitali. He says, no, I understand that it's clear to me that, yes, Rabbi Yossi says that if he spoke up, that clearly he is counted. Amar tibaylach. The question is, when he suggests that he has a schut, does that work, or is that enough? So you can say that the reason Rabbi Yossi says zika, that he actually spoke out the merit or the defense that he had, is because that's a normal situation. In most cases, if a person says, I have something to say, they're not going to pass away suddenly. So in most cases, he's going to say it. And that's all Rabbi Yossi was saying. He's just talking about your average case, where the guy speaks up and says something to the benefit of the defendant. Even if he passes away afterwards, it will remain to his benefit, or we will remain enumerated amongst those that are zuchin. On the other hand, if he didn't speak up, maybe Rabbi Yossi still believes that that's enough to be counted in the benefit of the defendant, but the reason he didn't say that is just because it's not a normal case. Or, is Rabbi Yossi menduyak? When he says that the guy said something to the merit, that's when he means that it stays in his defense. But if he didn't say anything, we wouldn't count it. And that's what the Gemara leaves off as remaining a question, which is, when he states specifically that he has something to say to the benefit of the defendant, but passes away before he says it, do we worry about that? Are we choshish for that? And we would acquit the individual because of the possibility that there was some substance to what this Talmid would have said. Afilo hu. So here we said in the Mishnah that even if the defendant himself says, I have something to say, we stop. Vafilo pam rishona ushniya. Even the first and second time, we have to check if it has substance to it. Vatanya pam rishona vishniya ben sheish mamash bedurva ben sheim mamash bedurva machzirin oto. And the first two times, if he says something to his defense, then we pull him back, and we bring him back to the court, and we re-look into the matter, or we look into the suggested defense that he is presenting. That's in the first and second case, even if there's no substance to what he's saying. Mikan ve'elech, from here to forward, imyesh mamash bidvarav machzirin oto, if there's substance to what he is saying, we bring him back to reopen the case. Ein mamash bidvarav, but if there's nothing or no substance to that which he is saying, ein machzirin oto, then we do not return him. Amar papa. Targumua, explain our Mishnah, Mipam Shnia Velech. Our Mishnah is talking about from the second time and onward, which is that in the first two times we don't worry about whether there's substance to that which he says, but for the remaining times we do. And our Mishnah, when it says you need to check if he has substance to that which he's saying, is speaking about after the first two times. It says, Minayadeh. How do they know? The people who are taking him out to execute him are not Talmidei Chachamim necessarily. They're not necessarily equipped to know. So how do we know? We sent a pair of the Rabbanan, a pair of the Beit Din members, to accompany him in case of a situation like this, where they have to determine whether there is substance to that which he's saying. If there is substance, we then take him back and reopen the verdict. But if not, we remain steadfast in our saying that he is guilty. Well, if that's the solution, why don't you just start that way and give him over to individuals to start with? Agav de bayit lo amatzi amar komai de itle. Because he is so scared, he won't say anything or be scared to say something. So in the first two cases, we let him speak, even if there's no substance to his words, in order to give him the channel by which he can speak and feel comfortable speaking. If we stuck to Rabbanim with him from the beginning, he'd be afraid to speak up. He'd be afraid that they're going to be looking at him, testing whether it's really of substance, and he'd be closed up or too scared to say anything. So we want to give him the opportunity to speak, so we don't put anybody with him originally, and we let him say whatever it is he wants to say, and then we check the substance once he comes back to the court. But once then he's become freer in his ability to speak or feels comfortable speaking, then we bring in the Rabbanan to test whether there is substance to that which he's saying once he's already done this twice, and we have found that there wasn't anything of substance in what he said. Because at that point, it won't shut him down, because he's already reached a certain comfort level in speaking up in his own defense. The next Mishnah begins. Matzulo schut, if they find something that is to his defense or to his benefit, patrul, then they release him, they acquit him. Vim lav, if not, itzei li sakel, then he goes out to be stoned. Ukruz yotzei lefanav, and then there is a public announcement that goes out before him. Ish ploni ben ploni, so and so, yotzei li sakel, is being taken out to be stoned, al shavar avera plonit, because he violated the following sin, uploni uploni edav, and so are the witnesses to this, komish yodei lo schut, yavov yolamed alav. Anybody who knows something to his benefit or to his defense should come and speak up now in his defense. Amar Abaye, v'tzarich lemeimar, as part of the announcement, you have to say, biyom ploni, ubisha plonit, ubimakom ploni. You have to give out the information, which is, it happened on such and such a day, at such and such a time, in such and such a place. Not the execution, but the violation for which he is being found guilty. You have to get that information. In order to open up the possibility of Edei Hazama, that Edim will then come and say about the Edim that are testifying against this party, no, you can't testify because you might eat them. So what Abaye is noting is that the information in the Mishnah is good, but you need more information. And we wanted to give more information out because that ups the likelihood that we'll find people who can undermine the case, either by being mezim the edim, or by telling us some information in defense of the defendant. Ukruz yotzei lefanav, and then the announcement goes out before him, lefanav in mikaralo. Right before the execution, that's when it goes out, but earlier on, not. Rashi says over here, mikaralo arbeim koyom kodem, 40 days before. That seems unlikely and very strange. You're not going to announce 40 days before the execution because we have a requirement to execute quickly and not have what's called inui adin, having the person remain under the threat of being on death row. Once we have determined that he's guilty and reached that verdict and going to execute him, we try to carry it as fast as possible so it doesn't weigh on the person and doesn't leave them in this state of uncertainty. And so therefore, to say 40 days before seems unrealistic. What the Gemara is saying is that we make this announcement not when the case is going on and when they come to conclusion, but when they're taking him out to execute him, that's when we make the announcement, like the final try to get individuals to come in defense of the defendant. Now, over here in the Gemara, you'll see there are sometimes good indications of this in the Gemara, which is that if you look at this daf, there's a huge blank space at the bottom. When the printers formatted the dafim, they didn't leave blank space like this. So usually that type of blank space is indicative of something missing from the Gemara. In addition, if you turn the page onto the beginning of the next Amud begins in what's a non sequitur. All of a sudden you have a Gemara Darshanim Psukim that seem to have nothing to do with the Gemara that we just completed. So those are both indications of a censor, a redaction of the Gemara that eliminated a section of Gemara that's over here. So today in the newer printed Gemaras, they have reinserted those Gemaras that were censored out. You can obviously tell from the nature of the Gemara why they censored out the Gemara is because it begins with the following. Vatanya be'erev Pesach tlu le'Yeshu. That on erev Pesach, they hanged Yeshu, Jesus. And then, Kruz Yotzei lefanav, and the Gemara continues. So we have a number of these in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. And usually, again, it's indicated by extra space on the daf, which is evidence of the fact that the printers probably filled out the daf, but somebody took out a chunk of it, and that's why you have a shorter daf, as well as the fact that you have a non-sequitur Gemara afterwards seems to continue and doesn't have anything to do with the previous Gemara. And that we have here is a large section of the Gemara was censored out, and the Maznaim Shas, when they reprinted them, reinserted these censored Gemaras back in order to explain it. I would just say as a broader note, that when the Gemara speaks about Yeshu, it's not always speaking about Jesus the person, but rather the church as a whole, or the institution of the church, or the minim, those that had deviated from the faith, and then were causing problems for the Jews, either by coming back and trying to proselytize, or to get the Jews in trouble with the government, especially when Christianity becomes the official religion of the Roman Empire. Then it becomes much more difficult for the Jews, and then the church does a lot to persecute and cause difficulty for the Jews. And so many times the responses of the Gemara are not necessarily responses that deal with the person directly of Yeshu, but rather the person Yeshu is representing the church as a whole, or the institution of Christianity that was persecuting the Jews. So now the censored Gemara continues, V'hatanyo, don't we have a bright Be'er Pesach t'lo'u Yeshu? On Erev Pesach, they hanged Yeshu. And over here, there's a question, the Girsa, whether it's Yeshu or Yeshu and Nutzri. Rakuz Yotzei lefanav mem yom kodem, shu Yotzei lisakel. And 40 days prior to his being taken out to be stoned, there was a proclamation that was made that it was happening al shekishef, that he had practiced sorcery, ve'sit ve'diach et Yisrael, that he had caused people to deviate from their faith. Hesit or hasata is usually used with regards to an individual, and hadacha is usually used with the communal level of irani dachat. So he caused people to deviate and leave their faith. Anybody who knows anything to his defense or to his merit should come and speak up. And they didn't find anybody who stood up for him or came in his defense. And then they hanged him on Erev Pesach. Amarula Vitispara. Wait a minute, does the whole story make any sense? Here you're trying to prove something normatively from this Braita about a story which has a lot of facts that go against the halacha. Barafuche Zuchutu? First of all, why would you look to overturn in his favor or bring things in his defense? Vamesitu. He is a mesit. He's someone who caused others to deviate from the faith of Hashem. Rachman Amar. The Torah says, Lo tachmol velo techase alav. That you have no mercy on him. You don't have to cover up for him. And we saw earlier in the Masechta, that means that we do not look to save him. We actually look to make him guilty and to bring a verdict that will end up with a punishment. Elashayne Yeshu, the karuv the malchut ava. Problem with Yeshu was that he had connections within the government. And since he had connections in the government, they had to take these extraordinary measures of announcing it much earlier than they normally would in a capital case, where the announcement would only go out at the time of the execution, or the time that they were leaving for the execution, and not 40 days before. This is like the source for which Rav, she says before, that the announcement is now immediately at the time of the execution, not 40 days before. The number 40 Rashi probably gets from this Braita, even though, again, it seems unusual under the rules of Beit Din to announce 40 days prior, given the fact that we have a restriction against Inui Adin. Tan Rabbanan, Chamisha Talmidim Ayu Lili Yeshu. There were 5 students of Yeshu, and their names were Matai, Nakai, Netzer, Uvuni, Vitoda. At Yul the Matai, so they brought Matai, Amriluhu, so the Beit Din brought Matai, did brought up of capital charges that would lead to a death penalty. And he says to them, Matai Yehareg, Matai will be put to death, Vaktiv, Matai Avo Ve'ereb Pnei Elukim. When will I come and see the face of God? Amrulo, they responded to him, In Matai Yehareg, Matai will be put to death, Tichtiv, Matai Yamod Vavad Shemo. God awaits the death of the individual, so that his name will be obliterated. Atyo the Nakai, so then they brought Nakai to be prosecuted. Amar Lahu, so Nakai says to them, Nakai Yehareg, Aktiv V'Nakiv Tzadik Al Tarog, that the one who is innocent and been acquitted, he'll be put to death. Amar Lahu In, Nakai Yehareg, Nakai will be put to death, Tichtiv B'Misterim Yehareg Naki. In the hidden or in the darkness, the innocent is killed. And you can see over here in Rashi, he says, Rotzeachu Naki Zeh, this Naki is really a murderer, Ra'ui Lehareg, and he is worthy of the death penalty, Sharag b'misterim, because he killed in a concealed manner in hiding. Utshuva ba'almahu. And all of these answers are just simple answers. Mipneho umot. Shekarov the mochutaya. Before all the other nations, because these individuals were close to the government. Ve'yutzarichim la'shiva kol rayot shel hevel shelem. And they had to respond to all of their empty claims. So each of these individuals, when they put up these claims, they had to refute the claims, even though the claims themselves, or in and of themselves, were not strong. Nevertheless, they had to respond. And the responses are in kind or in similar manner. So even though there may be nothing to what they're responding, if he brings a pasuk that supports him being some sort of protected individual under the Torah, what the Chazal is showing over here is that there are other psukim that would undermine that status. Atyul the Netzer, Amar Luhu, Netzer Yehareg. So Netzer says, Netzer will be put to death, Vaktiv. The Netzer Mishorshav Yerfre, that a twig will sprout forth from his stock or from his roots. Amrlo in, yes, Netzer Yehareg Dichtiv, Atai Shlachta Mikivrecha, Knetzer Nitav, that you will be thrown out of your grave like loathsome carrion. At you, the Buni, they brought Buni, Amar Lahu, Buni Yehareg. Buni should be put to death, Vakti Bini Bechori Yisrael, my firstborn child Yisrael. Amar Lahu In, Buni Yehareg, Dichtiv, Inei Anochi Yehareg Et Bincha Bechorecha, because I'm going to put to death your firstborn child, referring to Paro. At you, the Toda, they brought forth Toda, Amar Lahu, Toda Yehareg, Toda should be put to death, Vakti Mizmor the Toda, that one sings praises or a song of praise to Toda. Amrulay in Toda Yareg Dichtiv Zoveach Toda Yechabdinani, that the one who shechs or kills Toda will give kavod to God. Obviously, it's a nuanced reading of the Pasuk. But this also parlays us into the beginning of the next Amud, which is Amrei Bishum Belevi. Kol Zoveach Et Yitzro Umitvadeh Alav. Anyone who sacrifices their Yetzer and confesses on the sins that they have done. It's as if he has honored God in two worlds. Olam hazeh v'olam haba. This world and the world to come. Tichtiv, as the pasuk says, Zoveach toda yechabdinani. As Rashi explains over here, after the Yetzer has convinced him to do something wrong, he is zoveach. He shechs the Yitzharav horago, shav b'tshuva, and he does a full-fledged tshuva, mitvadeh alav. Shnei nunim, darish l'shnei kibudim. That's what it says, zoveach le'todah. Todah over here, or the word hoda'ah, can come in two forms, todah in the form of thank you, and todah in the form of admission. The truth is that they might be overlapping, because anytime someone says thank you, it's an admission that someone else has done something for me, that there was some deficit that I had, and I'm admitting that the other person helped me in some way. So the two might be heavily correlated between todah and hitvadot. But here the Gemara is saying that zoveach todah, when it was zoveach shechs the zietzer and confesses, yichab dinani will give honor to God both in olam hazeh and olam haba. And as Rashi notes, the two nuns are what generate that limud. V'amar b'shulman levi v'zman sh'beit ha'mikdash kayam adam makriv olah, schar olah biyodo, mincha, schar mincha biyodo. Person brings the korban, or the flower offering, and each of those items provides him with the reward for doing that mitzvah. On the other hand, someone who conducts themselves in a humble way has this sense of humility. The pasuk considers as if he's brought all the korbanot. That the true sacrifice to God is a broken spirit. On top of that, the person's tefillah is not rejected. That the broken and contrite heart, Elohim lo tivzeh, God will not despise. What Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is saying is that the opportunity that we have through tefillah is just as good, if not better, than the opportunity to bring korbanot. So even though in the time of the Mikdash there was a procedure that helped you through the bringing of the Korbanot, nevertheless here today, Neshama Parim Sfateinu, our tefillah can make up for the loss of the Korbanot, but even more than make up for the loss, it can even exceed the value of a Korban, because the tefillah is considered or classified as if the individual has been makriv kol korbanot, and also protects the individual because it's a tefillah that is never rejected. When a person humbles himself before God and pours out his heart to God, God responds favorably to that individual, because then they really have a sense of their place vis-a-vis God, and that will prevent them from, first of all, sinning in the future, as well as be an indication of their true remorse for that which they had done wrong until this point. And the next Mishnah says, Hayerochok mi beit haskila ke'eser amot, when they're away from the point of execution, the beit haskila, 10 amot, omrim lo hitvadeh, you should confess at this point, shekein derech kol ha'mumatim, mitvadim, because anybody who's going to be put to death, or anybody who is dying, they are mitvadeh, they confess before God. Shekol ha'mitvadeh, yesh lo chelek lo lamaba. Because anyone who confesses has an opportunity to go lamaba. Shekein matzinu ba'achan, by the case of Achan, when he took from the shalal the booty of Yericho, and then was punished afterwards, she'amar lo Yoshua, b'ni, simna kavod Hashem, give honor to God, Elokei Yisrael, the God of Israel, tein lo todah, and admit to the fact that you took from the cherim. V'yan Achan et Yoshua v'yomer, amna, anochi chatati, truthfully, I did sin, u'chazot v'chazot asiti, and I did such and such, or this is what I took. V'inayin shikiper lo, v'du'av, how do we know that that confession helped? Shenamar, the pasuk says, v'yom Yeshua, Machartanu ya'akrucha Hashem bayom hazeh. That the way that you have muddied the waters for us or spoiled things for us, Hashem should spoil you on this day. Bayom hazeh ata'akur, today you are considered to be muddied or despised. V'ata'akur le'olam haba, but that's not true in the world to come. V'imene yodelit vadot, if a person doesn't know how to confess or to say the vidui, omrim lo emor, you should say this succinct summary version of the vidui, which is Tehe mitati kaparal kol avonotai, that my death should be an atonement for all of my sins. And we'll discuss later whether a person really does do vidui on all of their sins, or really on the particular sin that is associated with the mitat beitin. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im haya yodea shehu mezumam, if he knows that the witnesses are false, or that he's being set up here and he's not worthy of this death penalty, Omer Tehe mitati kaparal kol avonotai, my death should be an atonement for all of my sins, chutz mi'avon zeh, the exception of this sin, which I'm not culpable for. Amar lo im kein yehiu kol adam omer kein. If you allow for that opening, then every person that's going to be brought to execution will say that. Kedei lenakot et atzmo, in order to vindicate himself in the eyes of the people that are there, and make it look like the beitin or the edim are questionable in their actions, and the only reason he's being put to death is because he was set up, they were out to get him. So anybody, whether innocent or guilty, is going to do that in order to demonstrate their innocence. And therefore it's going to be motzi laz on the Beit Din and on the Edim. And we don't want that, therefore we don't make that exception. And a person can't make such a declaration when they're doing the vidui, because it'll have detrimental impact on the system as a whole. Tanu Rabbanan, na. When it comes to the lashon of na, ein na el lashon bakasha. It is a request, a beseeching of the individual to follow whatever is being asked. B'shash amar kodesh boruch hu Yehoshua, chata Yisrael, b'nei Yisrael have sinned. This is after the defeat at the hands of the Ai. Then Yehoshua falls before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and basically pleads with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, how could you do this to us? You have now, in a sense, been mechalal Hashem, because now all the nations won't be afraid of us anymore, and we lost the whole advantage of the fear that was instilled in the people from everything that's happened until now. And now our defeat is going to lead us to give up hope and not succeed in our mission to conquer Eretz Canaan. So then Hashem says to Yehoshua, Kum lach, get up. Lama zeh atanu fel apanecha, why are you falling on your face? Chata Yisrael. Bnei Yisrael have sinned. Amar lefanav ribono shelam, mi chata. So then Yehoshua says to God, who sinned? Amar lei v'chi dil tor ani lecha. Am I an informant for you? So we saw this Gemara earlier on back on Daf, Yud Aleph from Aleph. Hapel gorolot. Throw lots and see. Halach v'ipil gorolot. He went and threw lots. V'ipil goral alachan. And sure enough, the lot came out on Achan. Amalo Yehoshua b'goral atah ba'ilai. So Achan says, Yehoshua, you're with an accusation based on the throwing of the lot. Atah ve'lazar goen yishnei gedolei dor atem. You guys are the two leaders of the generation. Im ani mapil alechem goral. If I throw a lot between the two of you, alechad mikemu nofel. One of the two of you will be implicated. So do over here. The fact that the goral fell on me, it has to fall on someone. So what's the indication? Does the goral really have any power to it, that it's indicating that I am the person? Here Yehoshua beseeches of Achan and says, don't cast aspersions on the throwing of the lots, because the goral is going to be used to divide up the land of Israel. The pasuk says in Bamidbar, with regards to the distribution of the land and chalukat aretz, ach b'goral yechalek ad aretz, that you will divide up the land based on the goral. Now, if you cast aspersion on it now, that's going to cause problems for us later on when we want to divide up the land based on the goral. And as we've noted before, that the goral takes on a certain element of hashkacha pratit, which is that the goral is seen as a mechanism where man has released or relinquished all control, and then it remains in the hand of God. And it's random, but not random in the sense that their outcome is completely unknown. God ensures that the outcome that we consider to be random is the proper outcome. Even though by the case of the Chalukat Haaretz, there was also the Urim Vitumim, nevertheless, it still casts aspersions on the Goral, which is supposedly an indication of Hashem's will. The Urim Vitumim just was a verifying mechanism to show that the goral was real. Over here, Yehoshua uses the admission of Achan to show that the goral is really working, and that's why he wants so badly for Achan to admit to his sin in order to verify, validate the goral. So therefore he says, Tein toda, go ahead and confess. Amar Ravina, Shchudei shachdei b'milei. Yehoshua convinced Achan to confess based on bribing him with his words, or in a sense misleading him with his words. Klom nevakesh b'mchala hoda'a. He says, all we're asking for you to do is to admit to the fact that you sinned. Tein lo toda v'hipater. And Achan understood that to mean, if I admit to it, if I confess to it, then I will be acquitted of the crime. Miyad v'yan Achan et Yehoshua. So immediately Achan responds to Yeshua's request. V'yomer, amna anochi chatati l'Hashem elokei Yisrael, u'v'chozot v'chozot asiti. Yes, I did sin to God, and such is what I did. Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rabbi Chanina, melamed shemal Achan b'shlosha charamim. The fact that he said, chatati, and uchazot uchazot asiti, it's a cumulative effect or a compounding effect that he actually took from the cherem in three times. Shnayim bimei Moshe, twice in the time of Moshe, ve'chad bimei Yehoshua. And one in the time of Yehoshua, which we know about here in the case of Yericho, where it was restricted to take from the shlau. Rashi notes that the other place was by Melech Arad, when the Canaan took a captive from Bnei Yisrael, and Bnei Yisrael then went to conquer him to release the captive. There they pledged all the possessions of Melech Arad, the Melech Canaan. An additional time with other cities where Bnei Yisrael had made a similar pledge, he violated that pledge and took from the Shlau. So he was a recurring offender here.
Shnemer kazot v'kazot asite, which is multiple times. Yochanan amar mishum Rav Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon chamisha. There were actually five times that it was Moel in the Cherem. Arba abi mei Moshe, four in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. V'chad bimei Yoshua, and one at the time of Yoshua, which is what the story is about. Shnemer anochi chatati u'chazot u'chazot asite. It's not clear where he gets the five from based on this. What you have to say is anochi chatati. That's one. Uchazot, chazot, the vavs add in another two, and then chazot, chazot is two, and that gives you four more, to a total of five. Although the Marsha thinks that the girsa should not be chamisha, but rather arba'a, four, and then the way to read the pasuk is the following. Anochi chatati, I sinned. Uchazot, similarly, I'd sinned before, which adds another one. Uchazot, and similarly, already I've now done two me'ilot. Uchazot, I did that again, that's four. So that's a cumulative compounding effect of four me'ilot. Three bimei Moshe and achad bimei Yoshua. So Marsha favors that girsa.
And the Mefarshim bring down that the battles in which he took from the Shlah where he wasn't entitled was v'ikit et amalek v'charamta de kol she'lo, that's one. By Mechemet Sichon it says v'nachareim et kol ir mitim, which is two. By Mechemet Og it says v'nachareim otam kasher asinu Sichon melech Heshbon. And by the Melech Arad we also have four. The one who says that it's two says that first of all Og and Sichon are considered to be one entity. And he doesn't count Amalek because that's not written in the Torah, but rather in the Navi that battles with Amalek involve Hacharamat Hacharim, but we don't see that anywhere explicitly in the Torah. So therefore he only enumerates two.
And as Tosfot points out that we don't include more and more, Chazot Chazot, similar to what we have by Kahena Kahena, by David HaMelech and the wives, that he could have taken more and more. He already had six wives. Kahena Kahena means an additional six. That's first of all because there's a base level of a number. And then in addition to that, he could have taken more wives. Over here, there's a limited number of battles from which he could have taken from the Cherem, and therefore it's very hard to explain that he's including more and more. Also, there's no base number, he just says Chatati. And Chazot then would be similar to the base number, it would be an addition of one, and that would result in a total of three, which was the opinion we saw from Rav Asi and Rabbi Chanina. Although Rabbi Yochanan, in the name of Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, brings that there were either five, or going to the Girsa of the Marsha, four charamim that he was moel by. And this is supportive of what we saw in the Mishnah, that first of all, that a person needs to do vidui in order for the mitah to be a kapara. And number two is that when the person does the vidui, here there's some controversy about this, which is that he says that it should be mechaper al kol avonotai, on all my sins. So the Rashash sees this as being a proof to the fact that when you do the vidui, you do the vidui on all chatatav. The question is that as every individual who is executed by Beit Din make that declaration, that it should be a kapara for all my sins? Or is that only the individual who can't specify or doesn't know how to do vidui in this particular instance, then he uses that more generic vidui? But not that everybody says that. Marsha disagrees and seems to indicate that the person only is mitvadeh on the particular chait that he's being punished for, and not the other chataim, except in a case where he doesn't know how to do the vidui, and then he uses that more generic terminology that includes all of his chataim. So Gemara then asks, Vad hashta mai taima lo yanush? Why do they wait until now to punish Achan? What happened if he was sinning all along? Why did Hashem take retribution on him long before this? And Yochanan Mishum of Elazar Rabbi Shimon Lefishlo Anash al Anistarot Ad Shavru Yisrael at the Yarden. Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu did not punish for things that are not public, things that are done privately, until Bnei Yisrael crossed over the Yarden. Kitanai, and this is a machloket Tanaim as to whether that is true, that there is punishment for the Nistarot, those things that are not visible or known to other Jews. Are we still held accountable for the sins of others? How does the arevut, the responsibility of one Jew to another, work in this context? And that is a machloket Tanaim, which is now going to be explained. Kitanae, like this machloket Tanaim, based on the pasuk in Parshat Nitzavim, which says, "Anistarot Hashem Elokeinu." As the Gemara says, why are there dots in the Torah above the words lanu levanenu, v'al ayin shibad, and on top of the ayin in the word ad? So that it tells us that when Israel, we're not punished for hidden items, for sins that were concealed from them until they crossed over the Yarden. Their arevut, their responsibility for their fellow Jews, only existed in things that were known publicly or known to others until they crossed over the Yarden, where there they accepted additional responsibility even for items that are not known or not publicly available information. Nevertheless, because of Arevut, they are responsible for those Averot, and that was engendered by the Brit, or covenant that Bnei Yisrael entered to in Har Gvizim and Har Eival, and that Brit included this Arevut. Amalei Rabbi Nechemia of Chianash ala Nistarot, the Olam, who says you ever are punished for concealed sins, for sins that you're not aware of. Halok Varner Mar ad Olam. The Pasuk says this is the way it is forever, that the Nistarot are Hashem's responsibility. Vaniglot, and those that are apparent and obvious, lanu v'neinu. Those are our responsibility to take care of, because we call Yisrael as Vevim Zilizeh. We're all responsible one for the other, and we have to be mochiach. We have to stop people from sinning and not doing the right thing. Rather, Rabbi Nechemia believes that before they came into Eretz Yisrael, they crossed over the Yarden, you were not responsible not for concealed sins and not public sins or well or known sins, because there was no Arevut. Arevut only starts once they enter into Eretz Yisrael. Once they've entered Eretz Yisrael and the covenant, the Har Gvizim and Har Eival applies, it seems to be that there is some inconsistency here, because the Arevut really starts at Har Gvizim and Har Eival, and here it says it starts once they cross over the Yarden. So you can either say that it means not literally when they cross over the Yarden, but rather once they entered into the covenant, the Har Gvizim and Har Eival, it applied to them. Or you could say that the Mafreya, retroactively, it applied from the moment that they crossed over the Yarden. So Ella Achan Maitaima Ianesh. So then, why was Achan punished? Not why was Achan punished, but why were Bnei Yisrael punished for the sin of Achan if they didn't know about it, if it was concealed? Because it wasn't concealed. His wife and children knew about it. It wasn't a personal sin that nobody knew about at all. It wasn't concealed from everyone. His family was well aware of it. And therefore, it was considered to be galoi. And that Bnei Yisrael are responsible for once they enter into Eretz Yisrael. So it's a machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemia as to whether the responsibility of a revolt applies only to galoi, sins that are in the public realm, sins that are known to others, or does it also even apply to nistarot, those that are hidden from us or concealed from us where we don't know about them. Is there a still responsibility of Arevut? Now, in interpreting the Braita, there is a major machlok between Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam as to how to read this Braita. So the Girsa in the Braita, according to Rashi, is Mlameid, Shanashal Nistarot Mieshavru Yisrael et Yarden. It teaches you that Bnei Yisrael were punished for those things that were hidden once they crossed over the Yarden, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. And the way that Rashi explains this is that the Hava Amina is that you would not have to get punished at all for the Nistarot. That is the starting assumption, that Nistarot would be out of our realm completely, because they are Nistarot. There's no reason we should be held accountable for things that we don't know about. Now, the reason that we don't say that is because of the Nikud, the fact that there are dots above the words. And what Rashi suggests over here is that the dots should have really been on top of the words Lashem Elokeinu. And by putting dots on top of the Lashem Elokeinu, it's as if to say that Lashem Elokeinu does not belong here. It should be taken out. Which means that now you would read the Pasuk as Anistarot, Vaniglot, Lanu Levanenu Adolam, Esotu Kol Divrei HaTorah Azot. That we are responsible both for the Nistarot and the Niglot, because we've now eliminated Lashem Elokeinu from the Pasuk, meaning that we are solely responsible both for the Nistarot and the Niglot. And the explanation of that would be that Hashem Elokeinu would be present Lifnei Shavru Et HaYarden. That means before they cross over the Yarden, Anistarot Lashem Elokeinu, the hidden issues are Hashem's issue. Vaniglot Lanu Levanenu. Those that are in the open, those that we know about, are our problem and we need to deal with them. Mishavru Et HaYarden, once they cross over the Yarden and the Arevut kicks in, then Anistarot Ve'aniglot Lanu Levanenu Adulam. Both the hidden items as well as the items that we know about, they are our responsibility. So that would be the way to read the Pasuk according to Rashi, which is the Hava Amina is the Nistarot would be completely patur from beginning to end. Melameid, the pasuk comes to teach you through the dots that you are me'anesh on the Nistarot post the crossing of the Yarden. But the pasuk doesn't have dots unless Shem Elokeinu, and that's what Rashi points out, that lav orach ara l'nekod et Hashem. It is not proper to put dots on the Shem Hashem as if to say God's name should not be there. Therefore, and the Balei Tosafot point this out in Rashi, it took same 11 dots that would have been on top of Lashem Elokeinu and placed them on top of Lanu Uvanenu Ayin of Ad. So it's 11-11. And to say as if, instead of putting on Lashem Elokeinu, we put it on Lanu Uvanenu.
and the Nikud on Lanu Levanenu comes to teach you She'ein kan mekomo mamash, that Lanu Levanenu can move around in the Pasuk Ela lamala min aniglot. And that is, before they crossed over the Yardain, the way to read the Pasuk is Anistarot Hashem Elokeinu Vaniglot Lanu Levanenu. The Nistarot are Hashem's issue, the Niglot are our problem. Post going through the Yardain, you move Lanu Levanenu up and say Anistarot Hashem Elokeinu Lanu Levanenu. The Nistarot are now our problem as well at Olam. Now, why doesn't the Pasuk just say that from the get-go? Nistarot Hashem Elokeinu Lanu Levanenu at Olam. And then we would know that the Nistarot are our problem. Rashi says, if you had just written it that way, then you would have thought that that was the permanent state. We were always responsible for the Nistarot, both prior to the crossing the Yardain and in post-crossing the Yardain. Therefore, the Pasuk puts the dots on Lanu Levanenu to tell us, Nidrash Lahacha or Lahacha, that you are Doresh Lanu Levanenu in both instances. One case in place, which says that the Nistarot are Hashem's issues, the Niglot are our issues. And then once, when you move it up in the Pasuk to say both the Nistarot and the Niglot are our issues. And then Rashi finishes off by saying in the Sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, the Nikudah and the Ayin is coming to teach you that the Adolam in the Pasuk doesn't mean Meolam V'Adolam, meaning it was this way and forever will be this way, but rather this Midah begins Adolam. Begins now and continues forever. So this is the beginning point. It's not something that was present or here beforehand. It begins now and continues forward. And so this din is only once they cross over the Yardain that we are responsible both for the Nistarot and the Niglot. That's how Rashi learns Rabbi Yehuda. And then Rabbi Nechemiah comes along and says, how can you say that? V'chi anash al Nistarot le'olam? Since when are you punished for Nistarot at all? Hakol kabar ne'amar ad olam. The Pasuk says forever, forever means that you don't get punished on the Nistarot. Similar, just like you don't get punished for the Nistarot, both before the crossing of the Yardain and after the crossing of the Yardain, so too you're not punished for the Onsim Shebgalui until they cross over the Yardain. And therefore, the reading of the Pasuk would be, Lifnei Shavru et Yardain, before they go over the Yardain, it would say, Anistarot Hashem Elokeinu Vaniglot. The Nistarot and the Niglot are Hashem's issue. The Lanu Levanenu is dropped completely. The dots say, remove it. And that's what Rashi says. That does not kick in, except Mikan Veileh, from the time they cross over the Yardain. That means that the words Lanu Levanenu are absent from the Pasuk before they cross the Yardain. Hashem is solely responsible for taking care of or punishing those that do it Benistar or those that do it Begalui. On the other hand, Misha Avruet the Yardain, then Lanu Levanenu shows up in the Pasuk, and we divide it. Hanistarot Hashem Elokeinu, Vaniglot Lanu Levanenu. The Nistarot Hashem will be metapel with, he'll deal with them, because we don't know about them. The Niglot are our issue, because of Kol Yisrael Arabim Zeh Lazeh. And the Adolam has to be going, and this is what Rashi claims, on Petorah de Nistarot Kai. It has to be coming to teach you that Nistarot are Patur both before and after. That is the Chiddush of the Adolam. Because if the Adolam is coming to teach you that the Chiyuv of Niglot, that now that you're Chayav and Niglot, it will continue forever, that's obvious. Once you have put the punishment in place for Niglot, why would it stop at any point? So the only reason to have the Adolam there is to teach you that Nistarot apply both before and after on an equal footing, which means you are not culpable both before and afterwards. The only thing you're culpable for is the Niglot, and that's only after you cross over the Yardain. That is the reading according to Rashi. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Tam upholds the Girsa that we have in our Gemaras, as well as the Girsa that was found in many Sfarim. You can see Rashi tried to change the Girsa and says, I think the Girsa should be this way, even though he says in the end, they are the same thing, but the starting point makes a difference. And therefore, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, the Girsa is the following in Rabbi Yehuda's position, which is, Melameid, Shalo anash al nistarot ad she'avru Yisrael et Yardain. That the Nistarot were not punished until they crossed over the Yardain. Implying that the Hava Amina was, not like Rashi said that it would be, everything was patur beforehand, but rather the Hava Amina would be that you would get punished both for the Niglot and for the Nistarot. And the way to read the puzzle would be this. Hanistarot Hashem Elokeinu v'Niglot. Hanistarot is not telling us about the Avera that's Nistar, Hashem is responsible, but rather, Hanistarot, which is qualified by the Hashem Elokeinu, they are Nistar because they're only known to Hashem Elokeinu. Those Nistarot and the Niglot, Lanu Levanenu Ad Olam, are our responsibility forever. And so that would be the Hava Amina. Aval, the thing is that there are dots on top of Lanu Ulevanenu to teach us that this Midah is not Noheget Le'olam. Only comes into place Misha Avru Et HaYardein. Once they cross over the Yarden, then we read the pasuk the way we just did, which is Anistarot LaShem Elokeinu. Those things that are Nistar, that only Hashem knows about, Vaniglot, and those things that we know about, Lanu LeVaneinu, responsible for. That's once you've crossed over the Yarden. But prior to crossing over the Yarden, Anistarot LaShem Elokeinu, Vaniglot, then it would be Hashem's issue. Both the Nistarot and the Niglot would be Hashem's issue. But then, that would be true if there were two dots on top of the Ad, or there were no dots on top of the Ad, you would think Ad Olam, that it was always this way. Always this means that Niglot and Nistarot always have the same din. That means prior to going through the Yarden, Nistarot and Niglot are all Hashem's issue, and once we cross over the Yarden, they are our issue. Along comes the dot on top of the Ayin and says, split it. Only half of these items apply forever, and half of them only apply once you cross over the Yarden. And the Rabbeinu Tam says, Mistavra de Nistarot mishavru v'niglot le'olam. And it makes sense to say that the Nistarot only kick into place once you cross over the Yarden, whereas the Niglot were always in place. And therefore the reading of the Pasuk will be, before you cross over the Yarden, le'olam is our responsibility, meaning the Niglot. That means the Nistarot, Hashem Elokeinu, the things that we don't know about, Hashem will deal with. Vaniglot, the things that we do know about, we have to take care of. Then, Mishavru et Yarden, both the Nistarot, Hashem Elokeinu, Vaniglot, both those things that Hashem is the only one who knows about, as well as Niglot, the things that we know about, Lanu Ulevaneinu, they are our issue. So in the end, he ends up in the same place as Rashi, but he starts from a different Havamina. The Havamina is that you would get punished both for the Niglot and the Nistarot, had it not been for the dots above Lanu Ulevaneinu. Whereas Rashi suggests that the Havamina of the Gemara is that you would get no punishment on the Nistarot, and therefore the whole purpose, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is to come and teach you Mamej Anash al Nistarot, that you got the punishment of Nistarot. Whereas the Rabbeinu Tam is coming to teach you that the Onesh that you would have assumed applied to both of them, that only starts for the Nistarot after you cross over the Yarden. And then Rabbi Nechemia rejects that and says, that doesn't make sense, because the Hekesh between Nistarot and Niglot must come to teach you that Nistarot and Niglot have the exact same din. And therefore, just like the Nistarot are Patur beforehand, so too the Niglot must be Patur beforehand. And that means that before they go over the Yarden, HaNistarot Hashem Elokeinu VaNiglot, that the Nistarot and the Niglot are Hashem's issues. Mishavru et Yarden, once you cross over the Yarden, then HaNistarot Hashem Elokeinu VaNiglot Lanu LeVaneinu. So that's what the dots on the top of Lanu LeVaneinu come to teach you, that the Lanu LeVaneinu applies only after they cross over the Yarden. And now you have the Hekesh comes to teach you the fact that when it is before they cross the Yarden, that Niglot have the same din as Nistarot. But Rabbeinu Tam suggests that the Hava Meumina would have been that the Hekesh was strong enough to say that when it comes to Niglot, you won't get the full force of the punishment. You only get a small punishment, because in the end you did know about it, and you should have objected to them doing it. The fact that you didn't object to it, the Hekesh to Nistarot tells you that God won't punish you with the full force, but he'll punish you in a small way. Along come the dots to teach you, Lo Me'anish Kalal, take out the words Lanu Vaneinu from the pasuk completely. That means before you cross over the Yarden, both the Nistarot and the Niglot, you're completely exempt from dealing with Arevut in that case. Only once you cross over the Yarden are you then responsible for the Niglot, but not the Nistarot. The only problem is, according to this reading, there is nothing that Rabbi Nechemia does with the dot on top of the ayin, according to this version of the Rabbeinu Tam. And that's how the Balei Tosafot conclude, the dot on top of the ayin has no meaning, according to Rabbi Nechemia.
Okay, we're going to stop here, two lines down, on the top of Mem Dalet, Amud Aleph.